by request is autopsies. I hope everybody's happy with that. We do autopsies and try to understand what leeway exists for doing them. Today, you know, I want to mention something else about today. So today we're going to... It's a little... You guys are young. So I was going to give you this, but I decided you guys are too young.
Friend called me an old fart when I turned
20. You guys are young. I don't think it's necessary, Lee Einhardt, for anyone to get involved in this. I usually, let's say, when I discuss this topic with adult audiences, so I give them a halachic healthcare proxy to look over. So, I mean, if anyone's interested, I can show it to you. But I think it's a little depressing. So, I mean, if you're curious about it, you can look at it. But I don't like to depress young guys. You have plenty of time. Might as well be happy at this age.
Right?
The point of it is, this is a directive that a person fills out, and I still haven't done one. I'm trying to remain young. That will give instructions that Chas V'Shalom, at the situation that if you happen to be in a situation, if one is in the situation where it's an end-of-life decision-making process, as we'll see in a few moments, many of the posts can give a lot of say to the Chola. But if you're incapacitated, you know, lo aleinu, you won't be able to decide anything. So ahead of time, you have two options, basically. There's what's classically the RCA option, and they changed it. The RCA option and the Aguda option. And here in Eretz Yisrael, I saw the Rabbanut has one that's like the old RCA. All right, I might as well tell you about this. Whatever we're about to see the poskim, what the poskim really say on all these decisions on what to do. So the question is, if you don't make up one of these, and a person, an individual is in that position in the hospital, the doctors are going to do what they want to do, right? Maybe the family will try to have a say, but the doctors are allowed to do anything they're legally allowed to do if you don't have a written legal document stopping them. So that means, like some of the stuff we talked about that very first day, you know, those slow codes and things like that, or not necessarily doing everything that you would want, or sometimes doing more than you would want, right? We're going to see where there's room not to hold back and not to do things. And sometimes a doctor who's worried about being sued will do things that you would not have wanted them to do. In other words, to keep an individual alive in a position of tremendous suffering, or keep an individual alive in a position of tremendous burden on their entire family. So all that kind of stuff, you can clarify with one of these. But you see why it's depressing? Because you have to like think through this. And the truth is, in my experience, how you feel about it at your age is going to completely change, or in many of you will, 20 years from now, when it'll be more something that you'll talk about or think about. Right? So I don't think there's a point. But you can see what they're like. The difference between the different organizations is, the Aguda, I thought, had the best. The Aguda's method was, you assign an agent, a person you trust, and a rav that you paskin like, and put them in charge. Because there's so many variables and so many details that we're going to talk about, again, on decisions, that it's hard to account for every single one. And when you start locking in, like the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael has one where it goes through pages and pages of scenarios, and what you would want done, what you would want done, that's a much harder thing to deal with. And it drives the doctors crazy. And is, I think, rarely, in my experience, I think it's really completely upheld. It's better that, you know, when it comes to these kind of things, let the decisions be made al pi halacha, that's what you want, al pi a rav that you're holding with, and that's the best way to cover it. That's what the Aguda suggests doing. The RCA originally had this thing also with many, many pages and all the different scenarios, and they changed it to this. It's a little more like the Aguda's type this time, where they don't do that. But the Rabbanut here in Eretz Yisrael still does that old style. So anyway, if you're interested, you can see what it looks like. Anyone wants to take a look at one. Let's finish up these sugyas, okay? And I want you to see the variation in Psak is really interesting in its own right. The way you'll see the Gedolin handle the very same Makaros. So a quick review. We basically had first section of Makaros is the Gemara in Nedarim, the Ran in Nedarim, and the Gemara in Ksuvos, where you see clearly that there's a shita that you could pray for someone at the very least, who's suffering at the end with the terminal illness. You could pray that things should end, and that they suffer least. That was what those makaros seem to say. If we paskin like the Amsa de Bei Rebbe, and we follow the Ran in the dark. None of the other Rishonim weigh in against the Ran, right? But that seems to be one shita. Then the middle Makoros, the Gemara Ksuvos about the bowing to the idols versus being threat of death versus a threat of torture, right? And some of these other Makoros that I want you to see below it, but I'm not going to go into because I'd rather get to the shitas and get into the practical issues. The middle point, those three sugyas, are all about the fact that Chazal definitely recognized that it's reasonable to say that pain is worse than death. That there is this shita. Pain can definitely be worse than death. And death can be a relief from pain. And the bottom two are going to be the most debated. So those I want to do with you. So one of them is Pashit, the one on the right. This is from Hilchos Shabbos. And this we mentioned already. Afilu Metzahu Merutzatz, She'enu Yachal Lachios Ila Fishah Bi Mechal Shabbos. Right? So let's remember that. The din is, even a person you know is not going to survive for more than 20 minutes, a half hour, right? You are to be Mechal Shabbos for him. His life is worth it. Okay? That's the din. That says something, right? It says something about how we feel about a gosis. And we're going to see that, let's say, Rav Waldenberg is going to be very, very much affected by that simple halacha. He's going to say, what do I see? I see that a gosis, if it's worth being Mechal Shabbos, which in Waldenberg's mind is one of the worst things you could possibly do, it must be that we're meant to keep this person alive at all costs. Right? If you can be Mechal Shabbos, then certainly you shouldn't be doing anything to hasten his death. The problem that Tzitzel is going to run into is the next, which is one of the most fascinating Makaros. Actually, one of the most fascinating Makaros that we've had the entire year. That's why it's worth doing it inside. So, he's a very famous Ramah.
Are you chazim Yom Shabbos if you're allowed to be?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, Pekuat Nefesh? Absolutely. There's no opting, oh, let him die. Definitely not. So take a look, lower left hand, very famous Ramah. This is from Yeradei Shin Lamites. It says in the Mechaber, Kol HaMa'amitz in Yitzias HaNefesh HaRezis Shofech Dam. That's a very important call too, particularly if you're going into medicine. Anyone who touches, in any way, a gosis, and that gosis dies prematurely, by even a few seconds, is a murderer. Right? That's the din. Right? It's like a flickering candle. Comes along in the middle of this, the Ramah says the following. So I'm halfway through the Ramah. 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down. And he says the following. He's talking about what we could do to a gosis. Right? Everyone knows what a gosis is? Right? Gosis is somebody who's going to be dying basically within like 3 days, something like that. Okay?
We didn't want him to determine whether a person was brain dead or whatever.
Right. Okay, good. Bechein asur ligrom lames sheyamus mehera. Right? So Ramah starts off in the same general tone as the Mechaber. He says, you're not allowed to be gorim that the person die early, and you're not allowed to be gorim that he die quicker. Kigon. Mishi who goses zman aruch is a chole who's lingering on in the state of gesisa, meaning terminal illness. That's the way we'll understand it for the moment. Below yochul iparid, it's just not ending. The person's hanging in there. Everybody's like expecting, you know, to be over, and he's hanging in there. Asur lihishame takar v'akeset mitachtav. Who can tell me what that means?
You know? Can't take off a pillow.
Right. Don't take away a pillow. Or any kind of like cushion that he's lying on. Why? So there's a machlok is over why. What are the possibilities? So one is very metzias oriented shot, which is you're going to be ma'amitz, the gosis. You're going to move him around, and that might lead to a premature death. Right? So that's one pashut shot in what the Ramah is getting at. It's a little repetitive.
Comfort.
Right. So it's or it's comfort. Not a physical thing.
Comfort.
Right. Good. But he's getting a message when you start taking away the pillows that you don't want to give him. And this is a really important thing, by the way. really, really important to anyone, not only doctors, but if you're visiting someone in the hospital, make sure your conversation is always upbeat. I don't care if you're lying through your teeth. Right? Never, ever be near the chola with negativity. It is the worst thing for them. And it's documented both in scientific papers as well as all over Chazal and Shulchan Aruch and Achronim, that absolutely psychological issues can have a devastating effect on a chola. It can really end their life early. The last thing you want to do is give them any despair. So always be upbeat around them. And that's the other pshat in the Rama over here. So now he's going to even get more kind of like esoteric here for a moment. Just listen to the things he's going to tell us. So he says, don't take the kind of keset mitachta, mikoach she'omrim, she'yesh notzos miktsas ofos, she'gorminze. Right? So he's saying, like, why is this guy lingering on? Well, maybe because of the feathers in the pillow, right? Are somehow being gorim that he should linger on. Therefore, I'm going to take away the pillow to get that gorim away, and then he'll die. Now, pay careful attention to the example, because we're going to have to find the fine line between what he says you can do and you can't do. So right now, this is part of the can'ts. I can't take away the pillows, even though I'm assuming that somehow the feathers, right, from certain birds, and he might be talking about Kabbalah, he might be talking about allergy, I don't know what he's talking about, but the bottom line is that somehow you feel that they're gorim, that this person not die yet. This is aser, right? This type of activity is aser. V'chein lo yazizenu minkomo, don't move him from where he is. V'chein aser l'shum lasum mavtechos beis haknesses tachas rosho, kidei sheyipared. The second thing you're not allowed to do is you can't move him to a different place, nor put the keys of the shul under his head to make the neshama fly out. Now that's definitely Kabbalah, right? I would think. That meaning it's metaphysical, esoteric, not exactly sure what he's talking about, right? But it was some notion that the neshama is holding on, but if you put the keys of the base masses under his pillow, that'll take care of things. What's the alternative? Let's say you're a rationalist,
like
some of us, right?
Uncomfortable to sleep on top of a key.
What's so? Again, you're you know, like if you didn't put in the
room, you're gonna have to.
If you didn't put
in
the
keys,
yeah.
Constantly, you're gonna have to.
Yeah,
you're
going
to go get them. You're gonna be moving around. Ah,
so I'm assuming he means keys that you don't need to use, but that it the pasha chat in the Ramah is that it's really this is some alpi kabbalah type segula.
Storage place.
Or anti-segula, because it's meant to end it, right? Right? So it's an action. Keep in mind, like, all the things you're not allowed to do, okay? And then we'll try to put it together. When he finally tells me something I could do, and then all the posts are going to have to translate this Ramah to our contemporary scene. This is the real challenge. This one Ramah, we'll keep track of things. So again, I'm not allowed to move him. I'm not allowed to move the pillow and the cushions. I'm not allowed to put the maftechos under his pillow. About in, here we go. Here's what you're allowed to do. Listen to what he describes you're allowed to do. You guys tell me the chiluk between what you're allowed to do and what we just said you're not allowed to do. What you are allowed to do in this situation, right, is in yesh sham davar shegorim iku vitzias hanefesh. Pay careful attention to every word. This is, you got to really be medayik in the words now. So he says, if there's something there that is causing ikuv yitzias nefesh. What does ikuv yitzias nefesh mean? The prevention of the neshama leaving. What could be doing that? Kegon sheyesh samach laosob bayis, where the mace is, where the goses is, kol dofik. You see someone chopping wood. Kegon chote reitzim. Yeah, there's this guy out there out the window of the chol's bed, and he's going like this. So the neshama is not leaving. So can I stop the wood chopper? So he says yes. O sheyesh melach al lashono, or there's a little piece of salt on the guy's tongue. The elu ma'akfin yitzias hanefesh, mutter lahasiro. You're allowed to stop the wood cutter chopper, and you're allowed to take the salt off. Misham de ein baze maise klal, ela shemesir hamoneya. That's one of the most famous words of the Ramah. You're not doing a maisa, but you're mesir hamoneya. And that is mutter. So now we got to understand this and translate it to the contemporary scene.
How are those things?
Not an easy task.
There's like a little Kabbalistic thing that a woodchopper stops in the Shema Fluga. What does it mean that a woodchopper stops in
the
Shema?
The noise. In other words, the noise. It seems to be Pashat Pshat is that this neshama is ready to go. This person's let me reveal my bias. The person's brain dead, right? But the neshama is still there, right? You see how I revealed my bias? Because those who advocate brain death would say the neshama is already gone when he's brain dead. But let's say you're holding that brain death is not necessarily death, but it's pretty bad, right? It's just on the brink of death. And the circulation is still going, whatever else constitutes life is still there, meaning the neshama is still there. It's just not leaving, it's just not getting out. Why? Because there's a noise. And somehow that noise is ma'akev yitzias hanefesh. Or that salty taste on the tongue, it's ma'akev yitzias hanefesh. So if you could determine, this is what the Rambam is saying, this is why it gets so hard, and where do you see what they do? The poskim of this. So all those other things we said were asur, right? You gotta now use your head. It's not easy. What's different between the things that he said I can't do and I can do? Why is this called Hasaras Hamoneya? I am just removing the obstacle to the Yitzias HaNefesh versus those other things which he's considering a mamish a maisa ritzicha. That this is a maisa that is gorim ritzicha, or at least a gram ritzicha. What's different between the two descriptions? And this is not easy. It is why, when we turn the page, you'll see six opinions amongst the major postgame on how to deal with this.
We have three different categories. First is pillow, the second is key, and the third one is stopping the woodchopper itself.
Okay. There is a shiltegi boring that starts off exactly the way you just did. So let's see what you did.
And the pillows when you remove the pillows, you're removing comfort, which is like an act of ritzifa.
Okay.
Right, you're removing comfort from him, meaning the pillows aren't stopping.
You're proactively. What's going to kill him? The fact that you did that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the pillows aren't stopping him from dying. They're comfort. Maybe it won't even kill him if you do it. It'll just be it's a comfort.
In that case, isn't the shaman's not quite ready to go?
Or you could say whether
because if it was, it would be gone. That's what you have to say. Let me help you a little because you're on the right track, but I want to touch it up a second.
Yeah, fine.
In those kind of cases, you have to say there's no equal yitzias hanefesh. What's happening here is everything's sort of neutral and status quo. You're breaking the status quo by doing something, right. And you're causing the neshama to go out,
right?
By taking away its comfort, psychological approach,
right.
Or what else could it be?
But hold on, wait. The pillows are going to be another reason why it's also because it's moving a ghost.
Physical.
Moving a ghost.
Yes. Right.
The other ones,
psychologically damaging a ghost could be as bad as physical, right? So either chat is fine with me.
By the way, you're not moving the ghost. Then with putting the key underneath his head, that's definitely Uzzer because you're causing him to die. There's nothing right now that is going to make him die. You put a key under his head and now he's going to die. Then the third case of Melech and woodcutting is all you're doing is stopping of him dying.
Right.
So you're not actively killing him.
So what's the chiluk? What's the bottom line of chiluk?
There are three different categories.
I don't like to call it three. I don't know why you're making it three. I told you should think of it starts that way, but he ends up with two.
Because the active killing is supposed to
be active. Good. Mm-hmm. Clearly that's what it is, but how are we defining it? So
it's inherent versus artificial, meaning the woodcutter and the salt is artificially keeping him alive. It's not inherent in him that if those things that are not a part of his body weren't there.
I think you can use the words you're using. I'm not words have very specific connotations, that's what Talmud Torah is all about, figuring it out. But I think the idea you're saying is exactly it's going to be the same as Menachem's, the same as what I'm gonna capture and summarize. But you're right. I think you got it. In other words, you want to add something also?
Can we do it? Well, not like a woodchopper is something that would be uncomfortable. Like if you're hearing a woodchopper, no one enjoys that. No one enjoys that noise. If you throw something, you want the net to stop. No one like salt isn't something that tastes good. So not that you want it. Someone wouldn't want to put salt on their tongue. So you're removing things that would theoretically be uncomfortable, or even though stabbing is a shema, but as far as comfort wise, there are things that aren't.
So if anything, they should be helping him live, right? Were it not for the, I don't know if you're saying this, but I like this because this will complement the other two, which is, if anything, you're doing something to make it more comfortable, to feel better, right? And yet, if that is causing death, then it must be because they were just plain old obstacles to Yitzias HaNeshama, which is more like what these guys are saying. In other words, is anyone else saying anything? I want to summarize it now. This is the fine tune, and then we gotta apply it to things like taking a person off a ventilator, stopping the medications that are making the heartbeat better, taking away hydration, taking away. We gotta see how all that fits in. But the bottom line chiluk that I think you're all getting at, and I really like this. I never thought of that one that way, quite that way. Is when it comes to what's usser, it is something again where the assumption is the person is in a position where the status quo would be what you call intrinsically, he's fine. In other words, he's not fine. Obviously, he's a ghost. But there's no, his neshama is not jumping out of his body. His neshama is going to stay put unless you do something that will cause it proactively to go out. You have to do some kind of maisa that will cause the neshama to go out of its neutral status quo and leave prematurely. But in the case that's mutter, the neshama is all ready to go. It's not neutral. The neshama is ready to leave the body. It's being stopped artificially. That's why I like that the artificial could fit in. It's being stopped from going out by an intrusive, grating other force. In one case, the noise, and in the other case, the salty taste. And there's no iser tzicha to taking away Moshe Hamonea to the eco of Yitzis and the Shama. It's almost like saying, the person's really dead already, right? Because the Yitzis and the Shama, whatever that magic moment is, that there's no turning back from, is there. And we're doing the Neshama a favor, right? We're doing the Neshama a favor by releasing it. That's what the Ramah said. Because otherwise it's an act of Ritzicha, which it certainly can't be. So this is, as far as you can get, teasing out what the Ramah's chiluk is. Watch what the post can do with this. Very, very different. First of all, Rav, if you look, now we're going to go through six shittas. Turn to the page with the Tzitz Eliezer, because some of this I want you to see inside, so you really appreciate what he says. The way this is ordered is Tzitz Eliezer of Bleich are the most conservative. They are the most machri. They're going to allow the least. Right? They're going to really be very strict. So, for example, the Tzitz Eliezer himself of Waldenberg says, we do not paskin even like Amsa de Bei Rebbe. Since when? One of the points he makes is, since when do we paskin like the handmaiden against all the Talmidei Chachamim that were davening that he should stay alive? And he says, the Ran's great, but you will never find the Rush, the Rif, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch paskining the Shaila that way. So he says, you cannot, and he's the only one that says this, you cannot daven that things take their course. If you ask Rav Oldenburg for his psak, he would not let you. Every other shita here says you can. Every other shita learns Kipshuto, the Ran, because the Ran is the only Rishon that really weighs in, and they paskin that there's nothing wrong. Obviously, wording is important. You never want to word it, I'm davening somebody should die. That's terrible. But there's no guilt. The guilt is removed when someone's going through this and the person's suffering, and then you daven, Hashem, please release them from their pain.
Why don't they just say Hashem, heal them? Why don't they just daven that?
Okay, so this gets into an interesting... I told you the story, what happened with me. With Rav Schechter. Did I tell you this story? Okay, so this, it's a tangent, but it's a very interesting one, and it gets right to your question. I feel like I told you that, but in some other context. But anyway, there was unfortunately somebody, a guy from YU was very, very sick, dying. And he was in the ICU, and Rav Schechter came to visit him. I have such a vivid memory of telling the story, that's why I thought it was in this context. I don't know where else I would have been telling. I certainly wouldn't say it to a Gemara Shia. But, alright. So Rav Schechter comes with his son and to visit this boy, and I happen to be working in the ICU, and he was also being visited by another Rebbe who lives in Passaic, and you'll see why that's important. So everyone gathers around me, they want an update. What's going on? How's the kid? So I tell them, I always try to give some hope. Rav Schechter sees right through me, and he goes like this. He goes, I need to really know, Halacha L'maisa, is the recovery of this individual L'mala min ha-teva? Like what you're asking, us to be nispalo, somebody should have Hashem work L'mala min ha-teva. The doctors all say it's over, There's nothing we could do, and nothing's going to change it. Can I just daven for a miracle? So Rav Shechter says to me, he says, you want to know, I'm looking at him like this. What are you getting at? And I knew what he was getting at, but I couldn't believe he was going to say it, halacha l'maisa, in front of all of us. He says to me, because he quoted, I remember Cheskel Levenstein, that was the original source for this idea, there is no davening for recovery when it's l'malam l'matam. Now, it seems counterintuitive, because it's very intuitive to you. Why not? So could someone tell me, where do you think the basic makaris for this idea is? Who learns Mishnayos? You know, I was talking to one of the Shana Alf guys today, and you know, I tell them what I really think he should be learning. Right? Everyone's like all over the place to learn all these different things. And this is true for Shana Alf, Shana Bet, for everybody, Mishnayos. I tell them the best thing you could do, if you went through Moed, Nezikin, and Nashim really, really well, you'd be in great shape. It should definitely be part of your Seder Ayom, that you should do a Siyam on those three to begin with, and then finish the rest of Shas, Mishnayos. So, for example, who did Zerayim? Who did Brachos? Mishnayos and Brachos that relate to this. Anyone remember? What does it say about a Tefillah Shav? What's a Tefillah Shav? Right? These are famous Mishnayos, guys. Come on.
With the house, you already had it.
Yes! The house is on fire. Oh, I daven, it's not my house. The baby's already conceived. I daven, it should be a boy, right? That's a Tefillah Shav. So that's the starting point. In other words, what does that mean? Why don't I daven a miracle?
Yosef, right?
Already Hashem, it's my house.
Yosef and
Dina. That's an exception. Yes, exception. That was it.
You don't
learn halacha from Nisim. You definitely don't learn halacha.
But the whole point is that you're davening for this. That's the only place you could learn halacha.
No, but the message of the Mishnayos there is it's tefillah shav when you do that. So Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein took this to the next level and said it's aser to be nispalel for something to go when it's l'malam min hateva. So in other words, Rabbi Shechter was down there and he was doing his effort and he was visiting and he was being a great person, but he wasn't going to daven for the individual. I have to tell him I think it is within teva that there could be recovery at the time. I thought it was. So thank God he davened, right? Because that's what Bikur Cholim is all about. But what's interesting about the rest of the story is, so then I get home, I get a phone call from a Rosh Yeshiva of YU who also lives in Passaic, because that's what the Passaic angle was. The guy that was there ran and told this other Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva calls me up, is it true that Rav Shechter said that you shouldn't be mispalel when it's the Malam in the Teva? I said, yeah, he really said. He said, it's unbelievable. He said, I was just talking to Rav Asher Weiss, who said the exact opposite. Right? So you're in good company. And he asked you a question, it's machlokes, between Rav Asher Weiss, apparently, and Rav Shechter. Rav Asher Weiss said, of course you could daven for the nes. Of course you should. Never give up, right? So our scenario, right, you could say like this. In if you want to like find out what the lemaisa you should do, is the way the tefillah will go, and I think what the psak is of the poskim over here, in learning the Ran and in learning the Gemara in Ksuvos, is that Hashem, I'm mispalel, the greatest thing in the world would be this person of a full recovery and everything would be great. I realize that's l'malam min hateva. If you're only going to work with l'malam min hateva, please minimize the suffering. Knowing full well that that might mean ending it soon. And that type of tefillah is, I think, an appropriate tefillah. Right? Minimize the suffering for the patient and the family, please. Minimize the suffering. But they should have a full recovery. I also agree. I lean towards Rav Asher Weiss. Right? So let's get an ace. I want the person to live. So the answer to your question is I agree with you. 100%. But you should know Rav Shechter does not.
So those crazy cases that you know people hear about that, oh, this guy had cancer spreading throughout his body, and then the next second, like, it's,
yeah.
But, so I mean, how could?
Oh, that's the other thing I said. That's what I said to the Rosh Hashiva. I said, you know, I got to tell you the truth. You know, the problem here is assuming the doctors really know when it's l'malam min hateva and when it's not. They're off enough. They make mistakes all the time. I have cases. Somebody just made a Sivas Hadar in this family because. For their baby had surgery and all the doctors told them it was over. Absolutely over. And you don't hear enough of these stories because people only, you know, get the they only publicize when tefillah does not work. But plenty of time I've seen in my own experiences tefillah works. Works all the time. With people that are counted out, that they're not thinking they're gonna recover, and then tzibur is mispalel for them, and they have chaburas and tehillim and all that, and it works. You know, because the doctor said lemalim and teva, and it really is. But all right, enough said on that. What's going to be more nugget to us is the bottom line on the practical interacting stuff. So the Tzitz Eliezer tells you the following. What does he do with the Ramah? Is there ever a time you could be Moser Amanea, which means what? What does it mean in contemporary terms to be Moser Amanea? What do you think? So according to the Tzitz Eliezer, this is one that is so beyond my comprehension. What do you think? Okay, good. So he agrees with you. But I got to tell you why it won't make sense. Because it goes like this. If the person's alive and you take him off the ventilator, you kill them. That's not Moser Amanea. That is killing. So Rav Goldberg realizes that. So he says the only heter is the following. He says if a patient is declared brain dead and then shown not to, you know, which means they're shown not to be breathing independently, and circulatory dead, which means the Chuli Alma dead, but they're still on the vent, and the vent is moving them and doing the shimos for this dead body, that's what it's talking about, he says. And we needed a heter to take him off a vent in that situation. So it's like,
how is he actually alive?
The doctors, when they read this tshuva, we say, what are you talking about? Basically, it's like, okay.
Why do you need a heter to take it off?
You know, he's trying to define, he's grappling with what we were grappling with a few minutes ago. What does this mean that the Yitzias and Nefesh and Amutter to be Moser the Monea? What could that be? It has to be that the guy's dead already. So he creates a scenario like that. This guy would be dead, but the Neshimos are artificial. That's why artificial comes in perfect here, because that's mamish what they are. It's just moving, it's like blowing a balloon.
You know, you don't need a heter for that.
He says you do. He says you do.
What are you doing wrong?
You're the neshama. In his view, you see, he's understanding that the life is defined by neshimos, right? Naturally, this person has no neshimos. Artificially, by the ventilator, he does, and so theoretically, that is the case the Ramah's talking about.
Okay.
I don't know. That's a tough one to work with. Rav Waldenberg on this issue is a das yachid. The only one close to him is Rabbi Bleich. I don't know anyone that passes like either of his piskei halacha here. Either of them. So we're going to move forward. Let's get to the next one. What does Rabbi Bleich do differently? Rabbi Bleich is also very, very conservative. He's also close to being a das yachid that some people follow, but most people do not. And he is saying that, A, he disagrees about the tefillah. Right? So he says in the first paragraph, whether it's in English, there's no contradiction whatsoever between acting upon an existing obligation and pleading to be relieved of further responsibility. What does that mean? What does it mean by that? It means that we have to do everything we can to keep the person alive, but Hashem, relieve me of this responsibility to keep him alive. How do you do that? By letting him go. Man may beseech God to relieve him from divinely imposed obligations when they appear to exceed human endurance. But the ultimate decision, Rabbi Bleich feels, belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He will never allow any type of action or inaction that would prematurely result in the demise of the patient. So when people ask Rabbi Bleich shailas in these situations, they get very machmir answers. Because that's what he holds. So what's the question? What does he do with the Ramah? What about the Ramah? The Ramah allows me to be Moser Amanea. He allows me to do that. So he said, the Ramah is talking about one situation only, a goses. Right? In the Ramah, it says the word goses. So a goses, Rabbi Bleich then points out, is a very limited scenario, almost impossible to define to some degree, or recognize when it's happening. In the old days, they could tell a gesisa. They would get the Chavre Kedisha, and the Chavre Kedisha, they had this Kedusha, or this incredible ability to say, yeah, he's a goses. And then that would allow for certain heterim and certain halachas and kohanim get out and things like that. He says, Bizmanena, we don't really know, especially because of ventilators and things like that. Therefore, we got to go Safek L'chumra. We don't know who's a goses, and basically, Rabbi Bleich ties your hands as well. And Rabbi Bleich tells an interesting story when he wants to show that he's not just a cruel person keeping people suffering, right? He says the following. He says, he learned that his shita is correct on this. When he went to visit his aunt, right? He went to visit his aunt in the hospital, and his aunt was terminally ill, and the doctors were like being very passive and not really helping her. right? And he thought things should be done. And he made a whole big deal out of it, and the doctors were screaming at him, and it was a whole big fight. But he got them to do things that he wanted them to do. So he said, everybody hated me then. You know, like, everybody's looking at me, you're a nut, you're just making this poor old woman suffer, and all that. And then I came to visit her Friday night, and I walked in the room, and I gave her a kiss on the head, and I walked back, and I was leaving, and I turned around, and she said two words. She said, good Shabbos. And then he goes like this, he says, and when she said good Shabbos, thoughts of Rabbi Akiva Eiger were gliding through my mind. Does anyone know what he's talking about? What's the famous Rabbi Akiva Eiger?
Very famous. You knew a mitzvah, then it's like...
Right, so what's the mitzvah? What mitzvah is she doing?
What's
Rabbi Akiva
Eiger?
Zachas Yom HaShabbos Kadsho, which is Kiddush, a mitzvah d'oraisa. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is the famous shita that you can be mekayim it just by saying good Shabbos. Right? That's his shita. So he felt very vindicated. He said, see, she got one more kiyum d'oraisa. She said good Shabbos. Okay. I think it was a nice story. Those are the outliers. If we turn the page, and we got 6 minutes, we're definitely finishing this topic. I want you to see the mainstream shitas of Rav Shlomo Zalman and the Igros Moshe. And right below it is Rav Shechter. And at the very extreme end, the other way, is Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg. So let's work our way through it. I'll tell you, I feel you could put Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe together. They have a very similar shita. And basically, they understood, I'll summarize their shita like this, you could see them across yourself at your leisure, but they recognized that there is, that the way they read the Ramah, and the way they read the Nedarim, and the way they read the Ksuvos, was that Chazal are telling me, there's no Kiyam, in fact, there might be an Avera, to keep someone alive, just in order for them to suffer. And therefore, they uphold the right to DNR. They uphold the right that if the doctors have conclusively concluded this is a terminal illness with absolutely no hope, and all that's going on, the more you keep muturing the person, which is the expression a lot of people use, with CPR and ventilators and dialysis and all extraordinary means, and we'll get to that term in a minute, he says, the more you do that, all you're doing is causing them to suffer, and you're not doing anything right, you're doing wrong. So they would allow, in such cases, Shev al-tasa. So now, once you say Shev al-tasa is okay, which means I can say DNR, I can call off CPR, I can call off ventilators, right? Where do I draw the line? Now we got to draw the line somewhere. Remember that thing we said in the very beginning, right? So where do you think is a place to draw the line? Like, okay, so no ventilators, no CPR. What about oxygen? So they both say, absolutely give the oxygen, right? That'll only make, do everything that their approach is going to be, do everything to make the person feel better. Everything to minimize pain. So they're going to say, oxygen, yes. What else? Fluid and hydration? Yes. Don't, Teri Shava was usser, the chulyam, except for Zalman Nechemi. We'll see in a minute. But according to the mainstream top, that middle ground, the Rav Shlomo Zalman and the Moshe, definitely never withhold hydration, never withhold nutrition, and even antibiotics. Because why antibiotics? Because antibiotics could lessen suffering. If a person has pneumonia, that's going to be a horrible way to go. Like, not being able to breathe is terrible. And anything, what about giving morphine?
Yeah.
So here's tricky. It can hasten death. So here's where I have the real tension. They're holding the sheet that we got to do everything to make the patient feel more comfortable. That's the chiyuv of family and doctor, right? You're not attempting curing. But what about when there's a conflict between comfort and earlier demise, or potential early demise? So Rav Shlomo Zalman weighs in on this, the kula. He says, give the morphine. Give the morphine, don't overdose them. You can't actively kill them. But he definitely says... And this comes up more than any other single question in these scenarios, right? I'm telling you right now that everyone's going to have to deal with this. You'll be in a hospice, they're going to be trying, they're going to be insisting, you know, if son's in hospice, lo aleinu, but it happens. Hospice is an end-of-life place. I'm so glad you guys don't know this, and it's really premature that you should hear about these things, but a hospice is a place where when the hospital gives up, and You just want the person to feel comfortable. Hospices are great. They really do a great job.
That sounds like you're psychologically killing them.
Well, right? Part of the game is not to let them know that they're in hospice, depending on the person.
Retirement
home. I'll give you an example.
Unless they have, like, Alzheimer's. How,
huh? No, you don't understand what it's like. I mean, I dealt with this with my father. I'll give you an example. My own father, Alaf Hasham, who, he was a pediatrician his whole life. My brothers and I tried to get him to retire. We wanted him to enjoy life. He worked his head off, right? We wanted him to enjoy life. Retire at 60. Retire at 65. No. I'm retiring at 70. He retires at 70. The day after he retired, he got a diagnosis. Within 3 months, it was horrible. He was never sick a day in his life. He was the healthiest person, never ever sick in any way, totally healthy, and then whatever. He had an incredible fear of illness and death. Like, it's funny he was a doctor, because he personally was very fearful of his health and very fearful of the idea of dying. So we decided, my brothers and I, that we would absolutely lie to him as best as possible about everything, never to let him know what was going to be. Now, many of the doctors disagreed with us and fought us on it, because there's a sheet out there and we're always going to tell the patient, and it's not true. It's patient by patient. Some people want to know, they have to get their affairs in order, they got to do whatever they got to do, and it's important to give them that opportunity. I say it's the family's decision. It's the family's decision. They know the person the best. What type of person is this? I know that my father had limited time left. I wanted him to enjoy it as much as possible. If he would have found out what the reality was, right, he would have been miserable and suffered and ended it early.
Don't people know they go to hospice?
Huh? So, right, so there's... Retirement. It depends how you present it. You don't definitely know. You know, if you get the wrong hospice people, they think that they got to tell. But no, you just transferred to... In fact, what we did with my father basically was... You're getting transferred to a step down, less acute ward, and it really was, because there's no more they don't monitor there, they don't intervene, right? So the perception of a doctor is, oh yeah, I must be going getting better, right? And up until like towards the end, when we felt like it was time to tell him and talk to him, we made it as much a mystery as possible.
But when someone goes to hospice, does anyone ever come out of a hospice like alive?
No.
Ever? No.
No, that's almost by definition. As far as I know, I've never heard of a case. Because it's like, it's a place for the terminally ill, where the whole purpose of it is to make them comfortable, because in a hospital you're not comfortable. You're miserable. And there's people bothering you and not letting you sleep and just making you suffer. So in a hospice, the big shiloh always is morphine or no morphine. Right? How much can I give, how much not? So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, give the morphine. Don't give excessive morphine, but give the morphine, even if it might end things earlier. Right? That's a big psalm. That's a big, useful psalm, because you want so badly to give it. You want so badly to give it. Now, just cutting down to, I want you to just mention something about Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter is pretty much fits in with Rav Shlomo Zalman and with Rav Moshe on the general approach. He adds and emphasizes one very important nekuda, which is that these decisions, to a large degree, should be made primarily, if possible, by the cholah themselves. And if the cholah is unable to, then they have one of these. And if that's not available, then the family that knew him best should be involved. He thinks it's the kind of thing that... And he goes further in that regard than the other two, in the sense that if the cholah would have wanted no hydration and no nutrition, he is not machalik. Rav Schechter says, I don't understand the chiluk between those and other medications. What do you mean by artificial means? It's all the same. And he disagrees with Rav Moshe and with Rav Shlomo Zalman in that regard. So he would be more open to withholding certain things than they would. I maintain food and hydration, I mean, nutrition and hydration are comfort things. It's a very miserable feeling to be thirsty and a very miserable feeling to be hungry. So I think that supersedes whatever the cholah might think they want. It's a horrible thing to be feeling starvation and feeling like thirst. So there is no way to end this on an upbeat note, unfortunately. Other than to say, we will not be talking about this topic any further. It's an important topic to know about, because, you know, unfortunately everybody faces it. Unless Mashiach should come to Mary Amena, we shouldn't know from this anymore. And no Aleinu 1,000.
Is that really
times.
What's going to happen?
I hope so.
Yeah,